And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well respected.
Plus minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus. This is an emotional episode. We come to you with soaring emotions, lumps in our throats, tears in our eyes, because Chris Mullin had some powerful words. Play the sound, Brian.
I want to congratulate you on becoming the Warriors franchise all-time leading scorer. Just an amazing accomplishment and milestone. One of many that you've already accomplished in your historic NBA career. But yet, passing Wilt Chamberlain is just an amazing milestone. I mean, I've watched you from day one, and it's just been a pleasure and a joy to watch you. So congratulations, of course. But more importantly, I want to thank you for the way you've done it. The things you're able to do on the basketball court, your work ethic, your discipline, your dedication is unmatched. Your fitness level, which just takes time. True leadership, your appreciation of your teammates. I mean, it's just, you bring so much joy and happiness to the world, and it's so appreciated. So I just want to say thank you for that. And probably maybe more importantly, Steph, your humility, your integrity, your class and your grace, that you, the way you carry yourself on and off the court, just a true role model for young and old. So really just want to say congratulations and thank you for being you, Steph Curry.
Slater, how choked up were you along with Steph Curry as Chris Mullin showered him with such praise?
I was listening. It was a good message. I was also trying to write my story, so I wouldn't say I was choked up. I was more like looking up, like, how many points did Steph have in the first half?
Tony Slaker, feeling nothing for Warriors history and Steph Curry.
What does this have to do with Anthony Davis? I don't understand this.
It meant a lot to Chris Mullin, and more importantly, it clearly meant a lot to Steph. So it was a good message, but was I crying on the other end of the Zoom? No, I'm a hardened journalist.
Bitter, bitter,
just writing stats down and gathering quotes, and was like, Chris, can you wrap it up? I've got a question for Steph.
No, I need him to write more about the pick and roll.
I would love to spend the next 5 minutes going over who might have been emotional in the Bay Area media group, but Tim probably won't allow it. So, Ethan, I was wondering, is this a big deal? Or is this a big deal because they're in like this middling season and it's, you got to make a big deal out of this type of stuff? It felt like that overshadowed a really big win for the team at a really critical moment. Was the Wilt stuff too much of a storyline?
You know, I feel like Mullin made it a big deal. I was prepared to just treat it like a speed bump and go, okay, you know, I don't know how many people ever talk about Wilt Chamberlain scored X amount of points for the Warriors who weren't even playing in the Bay Area when he was playing for them. I don't know if people really think about that, but it was Chris Mullin seizing the moment. And I don't think you would say it was the most eloquent speech, but it was so genuine and it was heartfelt. And he spoke to this really basic idea that we hard-bitten cynics, people like Anthony Slater, might cast aside, which is that Steph Curry gives people a lot of joy. He makes people's lives better with the way he performs, and additionally, how he carries himself. And even if we're not all in the locker room, there's a sense that he treats the people around him well, and he is, in a way, even though he might not say it, and Charles Barkley wouldn't endorse it as a mentality, perhaps, something of a role model. So Chris Mullin just was the man of the moment, putting that all into salience, and I was very impressed with it. I thought it was well done.
You know what? I talked to Mullen beforehand, and he was saying those same things. He clearly is moved by how Steph carries himself. Like, that's what he – I was talking to the great scorers and trying to figure out, like, what is Steph, what do they see in Steph that's common? And he just kept saying how he handles himself, how he carries himself. It's inspiring, right? Like, you could tell – it's unique, too. I didn't cover Mullen. Tim, you did. I didn't even know he had that heartstring. You know what I'm saying? Like, Mullen is Brooklyn, right? Like, I didn't know he could pull out the violin and let it rip like he did. But it really touches him that Steph is a role model type figure.
Mullen has that in him. I mean, been around him. I was at his Hall of Fame party, and he definitely gets very emotional about some things. But he was a perfect guy for this. He did mean it from the heart. It wasn't just, you know, PR stuff. It was what he does actually feel. I've heard him say this just in conversation. And I think it speaks to his teammates love Mullen, always love Mullen. And it's the same way Steph's teammates love Steph. You know, when you're a superior player, the rank and file get when you feel like you're one of them, when you support them, and they understand when you don't. And I think Curry, more than anything, it's that he is with these guys, he supports them, he gives them credit, and he does his other stuff, by the way, which is makes him this incredible player, one of the, you know, 15 greatest all-time, 10 greatest all-time, however we're going to do that. And you guys know me, I'm not one for sentiment, I'm not one for these milestones. My point is, like, there's any question.
He was crying, y'all.
Like, there's any question that Steph is the greatest Warrior of all time. There's no question. That was solidified by the third championship, solidified by the unanimous MVP, whatever you want to say it was. So sometimes I think these are just kind of ticking points. These are just, you know, mileage markers. But I think this one is a time, like, he's at a place where he's still good at 33. He's still good, you know, pre-dynasty, during the dynasty, post-dynasty. There's something important about that kind of longevity with one team. We may never see this again. Who knows? I mean, Zion maybe is going to play forever. No, who knows? We don't know. But that part of it, I think, is important. Even when it's just ticking things down, it's not like this moment should be that different than any other moment when he scored a lot of points and helped them win a game. But sometimes milestones do let you stop, put a period, and say, let's appreciate what this is. Let's appreciate what it is right now, and the Warriors picked the right guy to verbalize it for them. Absolutely. And it does tell you, and as I wrote this morning, or tweeted, it's amazing that they isolated and threw out Chris Mullen like they did in the previous administration. It's just incredible. I mean, I was thinking that while it was happening to Chris. You're going to do this to this
wild,
human being?
Live, yeah. Right? Yeah,
yeah. This human being, you're going to do that to. Ask Eric Howson about Chris Mullen. Ask Gary St. Jean about Chris Mullen. Ask anybody, Mitch Richmond, Rod
Higgins.
Anybody,
yeah.
Yeah, and this is the person that they decided to exile and make twist in the wind, and he still comes back, and he gives that kind of heartfelt speech about Steph Curry. It just blows my mind that they put him through that. Previous administration, Chris Cohan and Robert Rao.
It's probably the greatest indication of who they were, right?
There almost felt like a subliminal message within that of Chris Mullen having history, understanding what dysfunction can be in that organization, and telling Steph Curry that, like, you're basically maybe the main reason dysfunction doesn't exist anymore in this organization. And the main reason Chris Mullen is back, I mean, is he in the front office? No, but Chris Mullen's again kind of part of the Warriors franchise, which is probably something he didn't think was ever going to happen again, but now he's part of the pregame show.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I didn't think so.
Clearly, that was like a Ritter special last night. That's him working, you know, like Chris Mullen has been accepted back into the franchise, but in general, Chris Mullen has accepted the franchise again, and it's because Steph Curry, you know, he's not the only factor here, but he's a main factor creating the environment to allow that. And you could hear it in the way he was like talking about his leadership and just all that. And I think he knows just the way Steph presents himself has allowed the Warriors not to just kind of, you know, drive off a cliff like they used to on a regular basis.
Ethan, this reminds me, back in the day, the Warriors used to go to Hawaii. Remember that, TK? They used to go to Hawaii, absolutely, for training camp, and they would play the Lakers, right? On my first trip, You know, I'm in Hawaii. I have my wife was with me, and I'm just in a pool. And here comes Mully and Mitch Richmond. So Mully gets in the pool, and he's just like, man, he's just sitting there smiling at me, like, look at you, man, you made it. Look at you. I'm like, dude, I'm just sitting in the pool, like but he turned it into this video, like, look at you, man, look where you came from. You, I was like, man, I'm on a company paid trip. I ain't got no money. What are you talking about? But I was a young beat writer at the time. But he just turned into this big kind of moment, which maybe that shows how sentimental Mullen is. I talked to Steph before, and funny part was Steph doesn't even like this stuff. I think he had to kind of own the moment. Like, it was big enough for him to like stop and do it, but he doesn't like it because it almost puts like an end to his career. He thinks this is the stuff you should do when your career's done, and he takes it as a sign that you guys are saying I'm done. If you notice, he keeps saying, I still got a lot left, I'm not close to finish. He keeps saying that, but he doesn't like these moments where you got to stop and
Joe shouldn't say, hey, we're going to put number 30 up in the rafters.
Yeah, nah. He doesn't like any of that stuff that suggests he's done. So it's funny, I talked to him before, and he was like, kind of like, yeah, I mean, all right. I mean, I understand, but I'm not done. Like,
Steph, the way you carry yourself, you know, and I'm talking past tense because it's all over, you know, looking back, not going to be many years left, but you done good, Steph.
Who are you doing there, Ethan? Who are you?
I don't know, basic New York, bad New York accent. That's what I'm doing.
Did you see Wilt's stats, by the way?
Yeah, he averaged a lot of points.
41.5 points a game as a Warrior.
And 420
something games.
But to Ethan's point, like, you know, I covered the Warriors for a long time. I've been around this team, and I would not have said that Chamberlain was the leading scorer to this point until, you know, it came up like a year ago when Steph was closing in. I thought it was Rick Barry. So records are records. They are what you make of them. This is a big record. Steph was always going to get it. He was always on the trajectory to get this record. It helps that it comes after titles, but I didn't know. Again, did you guys all know it was Chamberlain? I didn't know it was Chamberlain.
No, I had no idea.
No, but this is, it almost, like you said, it surprised me that it was. I don't really remember, you know, obviously I don't remember the words, but the one thing now we can say is, like, the rightful placeholder is there. You know what I mean? Like, this is the guy who should have
Mr.
that.
Warrior, right?
Yeah. And he's going to put it in a place that nobody else is going to get, by the way. Nobody else is getting this record.
The surrounding context now, to bring it back to where we live, to bring it away from the heartstrings and to the 30,000 foot view, it is interesting because we're at a moment with the Warriors where I think we have some sense that Steph has maybe an opinion or two of where this organization should go and how quickly they should get there and how he might be more of the mindset of win now a little bit more than the surrounding front office. So it is an interesting moment considering that surrounding context, considering the Wiseman injury that I'm sure we're going to get into. It's quite the flashpoint, I guess is what I'm saying.
We got to get to Wiseman. We might as well use this to get there. He's out. We don't know how long, but Slater, what are you thinking? Update us on what we know about Wiseman.
They've talked to a few experts now. Obviously, like, they had the team doctors, the initial diagnosis of the torn meniscus. Meniscus is a very complicated injury, so I can't sit here and like detail every possible scenario and imaging that they're going through. But in general, it's either the treatment plan is either you go with like the trim, which is a shorter timeline. If you guys remember, Alan Smailagic tore his meniscus in the preseason, and they went with like the more trim procedure. And he was back, you know, within about 4 to 6 weeks, he was back on the court. You know, it wasn't a long absence at all. If you go with the repair option, which I remember I covered Russell Westbrook in the 2013 playoffs when Patrick Beverley undercut Russell Westbrook and tore his meniscus, the Thunder went repair route and like immediately announced him out for the playoffs, all that. They're deciding with James Wiseman right now which way to go, and they're getting all the expert opinions they can, looking at all the imaging. I know it depends on where on the meniscus the tear is, and there's a lot of like varying factors of like how much percent you'd have to trim and how that might affect like the cushion in your knee long term. If you had to take it out entirely, you'd basically go bone on bone. That's not the situation we're talking about with him, but they're just, again, gathering all that and then presenting it to him and his agent, his team, and eventually we'll decide which path to go down. At this point, they haven't ruled him out for the season, because technically if they do the trim, like, it's possible, I guess, he could could like be dropped back in like the final couple of games. But I don't think that's a smart decision. I don't expect that at all. So it's more about what his summer looks like. And it is a vital summer for him. You know, he needs strength work. Summer league would be very good for him. Like, if he spends most of his summer rehabbing a knee injury, that's not great. But at the same time, he's a very young player. And if they decide the longer rehab path is the best one for his knee, then I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. But they just haven't decided yet.
Do we know about a summer league, by the way, Slater? Or is there going to be a
August
summer league?
Sounds like likely August.
You got Warren Legarry on the other line.
Yeah.
Listen, baby. Listen, stud. We're going to have summer league. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be like three summer leagues in one. It's going to be incredible. It's happening for sure.
Ethan's bringing all the characters on the pod today.
Only the ones with New York accents, apparently.
Should they even be trying to consider to bring him back this year? If they make the playoffs, do you want him to get that experience?
At this point, I think it's pushing it. And, you know, maybe if it's minor, and you have zero worries about him re-entering it or being, you know, out of shape or whatever we might be, which we always talk about with injuries, then maybe. But I think they're so, that percentage is so low that you just say out for the season and, you know, practices with them, you know, during the playoffs or whatever, you know, whatever this run is. We've seen that, right? Guys are, we're looking at, oh, what the hell is he doing? Oh, he's just practicing with the team while they're in this postseason run to give them the feel for it, to give them the feel for what they're all going through, being a teammate. And then you try to get him to summer. I think summer league would be really important for him. Now, maybe if he does undergo a serious surgery, that's not going to be probable. But, man, I think he's one guy that you could really say summer league would be terrific for him.
More than just summer league. He just needs a summer where he's
not. The whole thing. Yeah,
he's not just going into the facility and, like, doing knee strengthening exercises. It's like going in and, like, doing, you know, lower body workout, then to the court. Then he's working on the three-pointer. Then they're working on, you know, some screen and roll type stuff. Like, not just working on the knee.
I might be singular on this. I do think he was progressing. I do think this is, no matter what, this is a wrench in the plans because you're going to see no progression for the rest of the season if he is out for this. But I do think he was, even before this most recent run, I think there were always going to be clunkers. There were always going to be games you go, what the hell is he doing? But I think there were fewer of those. I think he was doing more concrete things. I think he was definitely feeling the scoring, and that's where he's going to help them, you know, quicker than anything. And, you know, if you freeze him right now and put him in the regular season, I think you have a player. And, you know, if you look at him improving over the offseason, I think you have a real player. It's disappointing for them, I'm sure, not to see him for these final, whatever, 18 games and possibly in the playoffs. But there were progressions. I think he showed enough in the last 3 weeks, let's say, that, you know, he's on this rising slope, will be delayed by this. I think if we're going to view his season, I think it was in general a sign that he's getting better, and it could be getting better in a major way.
This is why I say just shut him down. Like, let him go into the offseason with this high, right? Like, yeah, you were hooping finally, instead of, you know, potentially getting back out there and being rusty and doing something to hurt his confidence again. I say let it ride.
The hands were looking good the last
time. Slater called this one, right? He's like saying, well, we were all going, man, I don't know what about this hand. You're saying, no, it'll get better if he just slows down, if he just plays basketball. And he's catching stuff behind his head, you know, the things, stuff off the bounce, much better, much better. And that is a huge thing for him. Just you're that tall and you can catch the ball, that means you're going to score 14 points a game, literally. It's just you can do it if you can catch the ball and you're that tall.
They finally simplified his role, his offensive, and you know that could be a rightful criticism of the staff, of Kerr's staff early in the season, you know, which we talked about, the way they flooded his brain, tried to make him bogut, all that stuff. But in a more simplified role, he did seem to just be operating more calm out there, and that seemed to help his hands. And also, like, he was getting a nice little connection with Steph, but also Jordan Poole in the last few games. And like, in one way, you guys are right, like that's a sliver of optimism. He's not heading into his probable offseason on a down note. It was kind of a high note the last three games. But at the same time, man, they could have used 19 more games of him in pick and roll with Steph and Jordan Poole. Like, that is a bad blow.
Right now, the evaluation, and I don't know if I want to completely segue, but it's not, do the Warriors look better without Wiseman? Yeah, they probably do, just because he's a rookie, he's so young, he's going to make mistakes. Right now, I'm looking at them, I'm looking at that Denver game and going, you know what? when Tim said it, he really wanted to couch it and not make it seem like a hot take that you could replace what Oubre's doing with an assortment, a smorgasbord of other wing options. I'm ready to go there. I don't think Bazemore and Poole gets it done,
yeah. You think?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a column. Small sample size, but just does not fit, especially when they bring Clay back, who is a sniper, but not exactly a distributor. Can we just say he plays too selfish? He just plays too selfish for the situation for this team?
He's got tunnel vision. There's no question about that. And, hey, they miss him trying to guard those guards, though, right? I mean, there are some guards who are getting off on them. Not last night so much, but Oubre could help them on. I've just said, and I'm getting ripped for some, now Ethan can get ripped for this more than me, please. I've just said, I don't know that what he does is that much more valuable than Bazemore plus Damian Lee plus Jordan Poole. And we saw that last night. They all did something. You know, Poole wasn't a great game, but he did something. And Damian Lee had another good game, and he played some defense. He was just swiping the ball from poor Jokic a couple times. And Bazemore runs into people. He plays bumper cars. He does weird things, and he ends up doing positive things. You know, like, I just don't know that Oubre's value is this exponentially higher than what you can get out of those three guys or just two of those guys. I really don't. And I'll keep going with it. And I agree with Ethan. Your incredible hot take. I will concur.
I'll be the Oubre guy on this one.
I want to couch it a little bit. I want to say I wasn't against them getting him, and I think it showed a certain admirable willingness by the front office to spend. There was a theory of the case that this guy, Phoenix, terrible situation traditionally, maybe we unlock something with him and he flourishes and becomes an all-star. I totally get it. I'm not knocking them getting him. I just think they've seen enough. I don't think it fits. I think he plays too selfish. He doesn't seem willing to have a role that's lessened, which is what they need from him. Just doesn't work to me.
I had one more Wiseman thing I wanted to say, but if Marcus wants to jump in on Oubre at all.
Yeah, defend Oubre.
For one, I don't think you could put any of those guys on a star player for any length of time. And I think you can with Oubre, and I think that matters. I don't think you just find guys who could do that. You could literally put Oubre on, pick the perimeter player for 25 minutes and know you're going to be okay. Bazemore is going to foul. Jordan Poole can't keep up with him. And Damian Lee, eventually that star will have his way. But you know, you could put Oubre on that guy, you're going to be able to hold your own. And part of it is not having to double, not having to switch or help. So I think that is invaluable. I don't think that's what made Clay so invaluable, is that you can do that and you just can't find those guys. They aren't on the wire, and you could do it two or three times, but man, those three dudes better be in sync, because, you know, if you start with Bazemore and then you switch to Jordan Poole, a guy like Damian Lillard is going to light you up on the switch if the guy can't, you know, follow the game plan. It's that ability to put a guy, especially in a playoff series, Oubre, this is your guy. Give him hell for most of his minutes. And I do think that's invaluable. I also think part of this is we're saying he doesn't fit. But a large part of that is because you're just basically saying, well, Wiggins is there and that's not moving. So the only other thing that can move. And I'm like,
yeah, that is accepting that.
Part of it is like, maybe some adjustments need to be made on that other side too. And plus, we just don't know. If you let Oubre walk and a trade happens and you get, and Wiggins is out, now do you need Oubre? It'd be nice to have Oubre if Wiggins is not there.
I think if Oubre operated more in a Wiggins way, and it's weird because we've said it the opposite a lot this year, where like if Wiggins had a little bit more Oubre confidence or, you know, aggression in him. But the problem is like Oubre, like defensive coaches love Oubre because you're right. He's like he's an electric factor on the defensive end. But offensive coaches don't like him because he affects the offense and he thinks he is a budding all-star. Offensively, he wants his shots. He kind of calls his own number a lot, where Wiggins kind of plays more within the flow. That's a big difference.
Yeah, like he'll guard Lillard on one end and then he'll guard everybody else on the other end. I mean, that's what it kind of feels like at this point, where they can't afford this. Not if they're going to play this pick and roll thing with Wiseman in the future. Secondary, they can't afford to have guys you sag off.
Who's better in transition, by the way, on this team?
Yeah, Oubre's great in transition.
Like any of the guys you name ain't replacing that transition ability and that finishing ability and that rebounding.
And by the way, he's their backup power forward right now. So I mean, he's got value, but they won without him. And I think some were just implicitly saying Clay's back, so these minutes are going to be more scattered. We don't know what version of Clay will be back, but if in their ideal version, where Clay is 80%, 90% of what he was defensively and making those shots and the minutes are trimmed down, I don't know that Oubre is that important of a player. And as we you go the Slater way and you can get a sign and trade, you get a pick for him, you get a trade exception, and they could turn that into something else. I said it early, I'll keep saying that. I just don't know that letting Oubre go for nothing is going to be that much of a deal to them. They need Clay back. They don't necessarily need Oubre back.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I'll use the Oubre to transition to the thing I want to say about Wiseman. Currently, Oubre is out because he had it was actually a really impressive dunk where he should have got an and one on it. Robin Lopez whacked him across the arm, and he landed, sprained his left wrist. Second time this season, he sprained the left wrist landing on a dunk. Marquise Chris broke his leg early in the season landing on a dunk, and James Wiseman has been injured twice his rookie season, both on crash landings. One was a wrist that bent back. He missed 11 games because of it. It really, it stunted his growth. When we talk about his full rookie season, that was a huge moment. He was starting to gain a rhythm before the wrist injury and then misses 11 games, comes back, looks out of sync. Now he has, hurt the meniscus on, what was a crash landing on a dunk. He plays a kind of dangerous style. You look at Blake Griffin. How old is Blake Griffin now? Like 31, I think, 32?
Yeah, about the same age.
His style punished him. Russell Westbrook a little bit. He honestly lasted a lot longer. But, remember Dwayne Wade early in his career, fall down 7 times, get up 8. He was the crash dummy. He started to use his skill, the bank jumper.
I never understood the math of that, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you, but how does that how do you get up 8 if you fall down 7? Slater, continue. I Jeff Van Gundy'd this segment. I apologize.
All good. Wiseman is playing kind of dangerously. Like, that was a dangerous dunk attempt, and you do not want to strip him of his aggression, and you love his finishing ability at the rim and the lob threat. And I'm not saying don't attempt to dunk, but look, I mean, like, if over any 4-game stretch he's going to fly in for 12 attempted dunks and be successful on a handful, maybe miss a couple, he's going to have 12 high-flying landings, and any one of those at any time can hurt him. And like, that's something that I think as he ages, he's going to need, and he has the skill and like, but we also say don't fall in love with the jumper. It's a tricky balance. And it's just because he's now been injured with 2 pretty significant injuries his rookie season on dunk attempts, it's something to start thinking about, I think.
I think a problem with that is not necessarily that he's going up. I think he's going up too soft. He got hurt because a 6'6 wing met him at the top. There's no way he should be the one going back on that. There's no way he should be the one when that shot gets blocked, he's the one leaning back. He went up, he jumps, he attacks the rim like he's a guard. When he needs it, in that situation, he jumped off 1 foot. He needs to take that one power dribble and go up with 2 hands and power through that dude. But that goes to what you've said from the beginning. Like, his issue with contact.
Also strength. But, he's just turned 20.
Yeah, strength,
he just needs to get stronger, which he will.
In that situation, there's just no way Kenyon Martin Jr. should be able to successfully knock him off that line in the middle of the air. Like, and that's because he went up to dunk, but he wasn't going up with like this force and authority. I think if he gets that part where it's like one bounce, two hands, and I'm destroying whoever is in front of me, that should have been a punishing dunk over Kenyon Martin. Not, okay, now I fall back and I hurt my knee because he blocked it. To me, that's a sign if he's got to get stronger and he's got to have a more physical, aggressive mentality, especially if you're in the air. Like, you got to dominate that space up there if you're the vertical, you know, if you're the vertical spacer. You got to get up there and force your will up there, not being forced upon.
2 foot jump. That's like, I mean, that's part of the game. Yeah. Like, if you're that big, you can delay a little bit because no one else is going to get that high. If he gets 2 feet down and up, like Pascal's a 2 foot jumper, he just can't get high enough to give up that delay. He can't get high enough, you know, no matter what.
He barely gets up. Sometimes I'll be wondering how he dunks it because it looked like he could get up high enough.
I know, with the 2 feet. With Wiseman, you can get the 2 feet underneath you and just go up because Shaq was a 2 foot jumper. And guess what? It wasn't a problem because you take the time to gather. Dikembe is not blocking that shot. I don't care if you take the time to gather and you're that big, you're just going to get higher than everybody else. But that's part of the game slowing down. That's part of feeling the rhythm, feeling what he can do in an NBA space. And you know what? Wiseman has shown some touch, not dunking. Some, you know, like little spin moves, little flips.
Yeah, the flip shot. Yeah, the little running flip shot was pretty good recently.
Yeah, so he doesn't have to dunk everything. It's just a matter of feeling what's right and when it's right to do it. But absolutely, he doesn't need to go out there flying like he's Kobe through there because he's not Kobe. He's got to go in there like he's Shaq. And I can't believe I came down to that, but I guess because of my Laker coverage, that's my comparison. Yes.
No, it's for real, though. I think if he had that mindset, he'd own the paper. I think he's trying to dunk, too, because it's a sure way to make it. You know, I think he's like, he doesn't like missing.
He likes it. I've talked to him about it. It's a very fun thing to do.
And he's good at it when he's within 6 feet of the rim, that thing's going down, as opposed to judging whether he can flip it over the rim, off the back, or whatever. But yes, I think being hurt twice, doing these flying dunks should be some sort of lesson for him. Some should, you know, learn a little bit from it. We shall see when, I don't know when we're going to see him again. You know, maybe not till the first exhibition game next season.
It's a big decision they have in regards to him. I know that they wouldn't want to ever say there's any chance that he would be traded, but there's a timeline misalignment for the Warriors right now and difficult decisions, and it seems like everything needs to be on the table. I don't think it's so bad that this season is a bit of a wash for them. I mean, nobody says this, but I kind of think, unless you're the Lakers and you can put together back-to-back banners, this doesn't feel as important a season to succeed in as other seasons. Can we say that? I mean, this season feels...
For everybody?
Yeah, yeah. It feels a little bit of a mess, a little bit of a gimmick. You've got Cuban going, maybe we shouldn't have had it like this, and maybe we shouldn't have the play-in tournament. It just doesn't seem like the same... You think back to the way cities react to a championship and what Toronto looked like in 2019, what Oakland looked like in 2015... It doesn't seem like the prize, I guess, is what I'm saying. The prize is at the level it sometimes is. And so this is a good season to kind of rebuild, as frustrating as it is for a lot of fans.
We're going to have two seasons of throwaway seasons, though. At some point, you do have to say, you know, because they're playing this season, the championship matters. I see what you're saying, but the last season, I could really feel that way. This one, we'll see how the playoffs play out. But I'll ask you, Ethan, so what is Wiseman's trade value then? Or even different. If he was in this year's draft, this year, right now, assuming he's not going to play anymore, where does he go in this year's draft?
In this year's draft? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Is he top five?
Ooh, man. It's hard because Mobley probably goes in front of him, I think, right? That would be the consensus. And so at that point, that really knocks you down a peg or two because your position, you are behind somebody else at a position that teams aren't exactly clamoring for. So he might be out of the top five. I'd have to really look into it.
If he was out of the top five, though, he should be six, you know, because like there's people believe a pretty significant drop off after those five. And Kuminga, to me, it seems to be really separating as the number five from the top four. So maybe he's in the Kuminga.
Jalen Green's been looking good. Somebody put together a video of the way he's shooting and the way he's playing. People have maturity concerns with him. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but that's somebody who's also, and then Suggs with the, it's just, there are, and there is a little bit of, the shine comes off you when you get in an NBA uniform and start making mistakes. It's such a strange scenario to try to have that conversation, because we've seen Wiseman make mistakes and look mortal on an NBA court. The same thing could happen to Mobley, right? But we just haven't seen it yet. So it's a hard comparison. And as far as his trade value goes, it's a lot different if you're calling us versus if we're calling you, right? If the Warriors are shopping him, then everybody gets the sense that, ooh, there's something wrong with this guy. They don't want him. Versus if a team needs to trade their unhappy superstar and they call the Warriors up and go, look, we need to get this guy out of town. You've got something for us we're intrigued by. There you can get some value. So I it's a situation where I don't think they could ever shop him, but if the opportunity presented
itself,
either. Yeah.
They shouldn't shop.
They shouldn't.
Him. Like, he should be used if a superstar is available. Is there one? I don't know. We'll see. I mean, to me, like, all eyes continue to point at Bradley Beal, but all quotes from Bradley Beal continue to indicate he's not leaving. So I don't know.
I think the playoffs, the meaningless playoffs Ethan's talking about will factor in. I think
one of the meaningless
teams don't look
it's,
good.
It's not meaningless, but it's like, it matters 20% less is what I would say.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, fans are going to be back in the arena, including back in Chase, which will be fun coming up, by the way. I don't know if you guys are going to that. It sounds like around 6,000, 6,500 fans in there. And I talked to somebody who's like very much in on the process. He's like, it's going to feel like there's a good amount of people in that building on April 23rd.
I'm very curious about that, because I'm like, that the Giants games right now, at the beginning, it seemed like teams with baseball were getting capacity. But I think the last Giants game, they had half their completely minuscule capacity, unless I'm reading it wrong. So I'm super curious what the habits are going to be for an indoor event. Super curious about that. So, but whatever it is, to what Anthony is saying, it's going to sound like a lot because we haven't had it. Just like in that Packers playoff game, it sounded like a massive crowd.
It felt like 70,000 people were in that thing.
So, yeah, really curious about that. And, it's tough decisions, man. It's tough decisions for the Warriors, the $5.5 billion Warriors franchise.
Speaking of tough decisions, Steve hinted at picking up a big. Once again, they look really good without bigs, even though Looney played a lion's share of those minutes.
31 minutes was a career high for Kevon Looney. Does Ethan get a victory lap here? Does he think?
Hey, I called the Kevon Looney Renaissance. I was mocked.
Didn't score. Are you back on it?
I was scored, and we didn't score, Anthony. And where would they be without him right now? You know,
who foresaw that Looney would be their healthiest center this season by far? By far, it's not even close.
Well, it's when you never jump. There are benefits to that approach.
Should Steve Kerr just go all in on small ball, see how many of these last 18 games they can win?
Oh, my Lord. Looney comes up huge for this team. They badly need him. They beat the vaunted Nuggets, and just immediately the conversation on the podcast shifts to marginalizing Looney and getting him out of here. Unbelievable.
He battles Nikola Jokic, the MVP, for 31 minutes. He gets 11 rebounds. Looney is needed in those matchups right there. Nikola Jokic, needs to play 31.
No question.
He's going to play 20 to 25 minutes. But to your question, and I've talked to some people, there's a thought of like maybe add a big, and they've definitely had meetings about it. And, you know, there are names out there, veterans, Noah Vonleh and, you know, Omari Spellman, you know. I don't know what type of shape he's in, but there's a name out there. He's available. Wow. You know, there are different options to get a big body in case it's needed, in case, you know, six more fouls are needed against bigs. But at the same time, the general thought is, number one, is Steve Kerr going to play whoever they bring in? And number two, should he? I mean, they're better right now in JTA at the 5 minutes. Draymond needs to play a lot of center minutes. You do still have Looney there, although, you know, like you mentioned, like, his health is always a question mark.
What's the word with Pascal, by the way?
You know, he says he's feeling better. He actually talked, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago. The hip's feeling a lot better. I believe the official reevaluation is early next week. I can't remember the exact timing on it, but
because that could change it, because you know, again, they do play him at center, and you know, he's on the roster, and it's a way to get him minutes, and you know, you don't need a 7-footer the way they play. I could see them, like, it just, I could see this decision weighing on whether they think Pascal's actually going to give them some minutes, or can give them some minutes.
The other thing I would say is, like, there's only 18 games left. They're not trying to make a deep playoff run. Just lean into this identity. It's kind of like the Rockets did it last year with PJ Tucker at center. Yeah. Like, just lean in.
Just go with it, JTA.
Yeah, gets JTA minutes, and you know, he's a guy who looks good in his minutes. And I've said that I don't know that I see him as a main rotation guy, but when he kind of...
JTA is a rotation guy. Will you quit hating on the Oakland man?
I know, I tell you. Believe me, I hear about it. But no, he looks good. He looks good when he plays. I'm not disputing that.
I'm against Marcus on Oubre, but I'm with Marcus on JTA as rotation man.
If you can find a way to get him in the rotation, I don't object to it. He does stuff. He plays defense. He passes the ball. He makes cuts. These are interesting things.
He makes open threes.
No, he doesn't anymore.
He makes open threes.
When does that happen? In practice? It hasn't happened in a while. But I have no problem with them putting JTA in an ancillary to supporting rotation role. He plays fine, no question about that.
And the other thing is, anyone they add, like, should they play over him? Again, it's like Noah Vonley. Like, should he come in and get minutes over JTA? No, I don't think so.
I'm sorry, he's 7-4 his last 17 from three. What do you mean?
Yeah, from when was the last made one, by the way?
Was the last made one? Mark, he hasn't played. He played 58 minutes in April. What you want him to do?
His three-point percentage is better than Steph's, Tim. I'll have you know that.
Yeah, he hasn't played. He can't. But he takes smart shots. He takes them when they're open.
I'm fine with JTA. I'm fine with JTA. Please, don't make this any other thing.
No, we're going to make this a thing that you hate on your original city.
We need to circle back to Marcus blaming James Wiseman for his own injury by not being tough enough. That's what needs to be aggregated out of this.
That was a take.
No, literally, he goes up like a guard.
I got what you're saying. We're just
messing with you, man.
Seriously, though, I think they need to stay small and make this push for the sake of Steph and Draymond, right? Like, you almost have to do it just because, like, you owe it to them to let them play how they play, right? To not, they no longer have to be veteran leaders and teachers, right? Just give them 18 games of pick and roll, right? Of high pick
and
roll.
Will we see any more Nico Mannion after last night?
You know, I mean, they pulled Poole because he was playing so poorly on defense, and they put Mannion in there, and it was more of the same. So,
but okay, they so do have, TK, they do you have got an the issue with those. For that? Do you understand, like, pulling Poole for defense and replacing it with Mannion?
I know, that's the problem. I know what I'm saying. That is the problem.
I think they pulled out Poole mostly because he had played, like, because he came in middle of the first, and I think he played, like, 8 straight minutes, and they did want to have him in the closing lineup of the half, so
yeah, but he also totally blew an assignment, right?
And he didn't have the range. He was shanking. He wasn't on it. The microwave wasn't on.
But that is the problem, though. You like to have versatility in your backups, and they have not versatility in their backups. They have two guys that their young guards are neither one of them you want defensively out there. You're going to try to hide them both. So that becomes an issue. You know, it's not a perfect roster. We know it, and they'll have Clay back whenever else they're going to do, but. That was interesting to say, okay, if it's not Poole defensively, then it's going to be Mannion. That's who we're going to go. That's our defensive stopper on any.
Should have been Gary Payton the second.
There you go.
They did use him for like a final possession, but not.
Yeah, that's what he does. He puts him out there for a final defensive position.
Do you think that maybe that was a Steve teaching moment of Jordan Poole, this is how bad you're playing on defense. We're putting Mannion in. That's how bad you are. This is how you need to learn.
Oh, I thought he was teaching Mannion. Let me show you how not ready
just
you
like the
are.
Speech they're gonna give to Smiley Geach. We're gonna get Amari Spellman back in here because you can't do it for us.
Oh man, that's crazy. Steve is definitely adjusted, though. He's kind of given way to what you know, what people were saying he wasn't doing. Like, there's a lot of pick and roll, a lot of ISO. Like, he's staying with small guys. He's putting in, like, everything he's been criticized for, he's kind of just doing. And I wonder how long it lasts. But it just feels like the way Steph was playing, you know, against Denver, the way Draymond was playing, that wasn't just because it was Denver. That was like, all right, we're going to get to play. That felt like they were like, all right, now it's our time to go. We can just play our way. We got our small guy. We got our big and Looney. We got our reliable big, our trusty big and Looney. Which, by the way, did y'all see at the end of that game how Looney was on Jamal Murray and Draymond was on Jokic? They guarded the pick and roll, the Denver pick and roll with Looney and Draymond, which I tell you is pretty big sign of the confidence in Looney to put him on Jamal Murray. But either way, if you get the switch, you got somebody on him. But that's some incredible versatility by Looney there to just be on Jamal.
It's a good point, but now I'm just thinking about Jamal Murray and how that all went. It does remind me of something that's not so sad, because I'm reminded of Azubuike running through the play and saying that he didn't even know if he could watch it, but going through it.
Yeah, he was like, I don't know if I want to see this. Well, you know, he had a...
Yeah, and I was brought back to that. I will say this. We knock one guy in that broadcast a whole lot. I think Azubuike has been getting better on broadcast by the game. And for the most part, I like what he brings to the table. And he pushes back. Increasingly, he pushes back on Fitz.
I love how he pushes back. And it's very subtle sometimes, right? It's smooth. It's not confrontational. It's a little bit less overt than Barnett used to do, but he does. Like, what I like about Azubuike is you could tell he's such a player because he notices those things that players like really pay attention to, and Fitz will just like talk through it, but he'll talk about it. Like when Bayes airballed that free throw, he's like, oh, he just kept like, that's embarrassing. Like you could tell he's thinking like, if I was a guy on the bench, that would be a big deal to me, right? We'd be laughing at Bayes more.
And he admits when they get a call they shouldn't have gotten. It just feels like there's more objectivity coming from him. It's been a nice progression. There's just this little subtle moment where Fitz is going on again. I love my four-year players. And Azubuike goes, yeah, maybe a little too much. It's just a...
That was pretty good.
I think Kalena started with a lot of promise. You know, I think obviously starting in the middle of, you know, you don't know how good you're going to be. But I definitely think he's finding a voice. And I have noticed, like, there's a little Barnett there, which is good, which is necessary, and gives the broadcast a little life. So, and he does notice stuff. And you're right. He notices, like, the interactions. He notices what Steph's facial expression probably is communicating.
Yep. He noticed the flex, remember? He was telling the broadcast, absolutely. Like, hold it, wait, here it comes.
Yep. That little stuff. And that is really interesting stuff. And he's only going to get better. He's only going to become more important in that broadcast. But it's Barnett-like. And again, we all can say that's a good thing. It's good to have a little bit of a pushback on some of the things that are said on that broadcast. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Slater, what's the next slate of games?
It's a road trip. It's a five-game road trip that begins with two absolute, I don't want to say must wins because that comes with a context. Like, if they lose, it's season over. But, like, you better win games. The Thunder begin it on Wednesday night. The Thunder have deactivated Al Horford, a healthy Al Horford. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's out. They just signed a guy from the EuroLeague from Real Madrid to get up to the salary floor. They're not trying to win. They're trying to get in the Cade Cunningham sweepstakes and bring him right down the road from Stillwater, Oklahoma. So you need to go in and win that Slater. Game. I know, right? You need to go in and win that Wednesday game. And then you go to Cleveland, another team who isn't completely in the tank. I mean, these are two of the three worst teams in the NBA right now, which I should mention, the Timberwolves are playing better than the Rockets. They just tied them in the record. They're probably going to advance beyond them. So the sixth and seventh picks are becoming more into play for the Warriors. But again, the Warriors need to win these first two games of this road trip. Thunder, Cavaliers.
Slater makes the Thunder sound like the team from Major League.
Do you want to... All right.
No, I don't want to.
No. I'm about to go look at their rotation from the last game.
Do you want me to call Sam Presti right now? Do you want me to do it?
It's all bad.
They've got a cardboard cutout of Presti in the locker room of the Thunder right now. Ripping pieces of the suit off. The final thing is the glasses.
The leading score in the last game was Darius Bazley, 17 points. Their starting lineup right now, Theo Maledon, Moses Brown, Lou Dort, solid defender.
Like that.
Alexei Pokuševski, who they're letting just chuck shots in the Darius Bazley starting off the bench. Kenrich Williams, Tony Bradley, V. Mikhailiuk, Ty Jerome, Jerome Robinson right now. That's
key terrific.
Justin Robinson, my bad. Justin Robinson, not Jerome Robinson. And then to finish the trip out, it gets tougher after that. You're talking Boston on an ABC Saturday night. Then you're talking about the Sixers and Wizards, who are playing better, just obviously beat the Warriors on that late collapse. And
wait, the Thunder got an ABC Saturday game? Or is it the Warriors?
No, Boston.
Warriors.
Boston.
Sorry. I'm going over the Warriors road
I'm sorry.
Jeez. This is a Warriors podcast.
I was looking at Andy Lou tweets. I admit it. I'm sorry. Should have been listening.
Thunder, Cavaliers, Celtics, Sixers, Wizards. That should be 3-2 at least. You got to get 2-0 early, and then you should win one of those last three. Boston is not having a very good season. They're beatable. It'll be tough, but they're beatable. Sixers are going to be very tough. Wizards are beatable too. So I would say 3-2 is
the... Oh, and they got vengeance on their minds against the Wizards. They got vengeance.
They should.
3-2, and then they get their big run of home games, right? Or close to their big run of home
games. Yeah, so. It begins. It's like, I think, something like 11 out of the last, like 15 or something like that.
4-1.
I'm just looking at my calendar now and go, okay, once I get back from the homestand, I might be disappeared to 49er draft land forever.
Era of 49er football, Mac baby. Jones.
It's all Mac Jones.
Oh, man. If they draft him, it'll be just
this is going to implode. The Bay Area is going to literally implode.
I got a column on this ready to go for later today. Let's put it that way. So.
No way Kyle's doing that. All right.
Talking
49ers. No, I'm not sure, actually.
Not sure.
But once we start talking 49ers, that means we are done with this episode of Warriors Plus Minus. To all our listeners, we will holler at you next week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.